Fast Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Carter Worth, Dan Nathan, Steve Grasso, and Tim Seymour. Tonight on Fast, Bitcoin is back. Maybe. The cryptocurrency having a bullish weekend, now coming back towards 7,000, but is the worst really over? We've got the details. Plus, Tesla nailing down its production numbers, but investors took the stock to the woodshed. Why? Loop Ventures co-founder and part-time astrologer Gene Munster has some answers and three crazy predictions about what is in the stars for Tesla and Elon Musk. But first, we start with a major market comeback to kick off the second half of the year. Just like Rocky Balboa, stocks today refusing to stay down very long, making an epic reversal after falling nearly 200 points at the lows, ending the day higher with big cap tech stocks leading the way. So is tech what will save us all, and will tech trump the trade war fears? Tim, what do you say?
I'll tell you what. I mean, here in the eye of the tiger gets me fired up going to, you know, the
why wouldn't it?
I mean,
why wouldn't
yeah. So look, is tech getting you fired up at home? I'll tell you what. I'd be very cautious to think that tech is suddenly going to be resurgent, especially when you think about the trade wars. We're using technology and we're using tech as a place to begin to, or not begin, to continue this whole national security debate. So, no, I don't think. I think on July 6th we may have what's a protocol to follow through on some of these trade sanctions, and I think it's not going to be a great headline. You look at the stocks, it actually bounced up the 200 today. Good stuff. But guess what? You know, it continues to test the 200, and this is the part of the market that was leading, and now it's struggling. I'm not excited.
Or the reverse of that, that it sold off ahead of all those trade fears, and we get to see on July 6th maybe a little bit easing back, which has been the script thus far. So I would be a buyer of tech. I do think that you're going to see a bounce in the sector mm-hmm. and in the markets as well.
I think Rocky Balboa was wearing that tie.
Tech is the sector that's most most dependent on foreign sales. And semis within tech is the most. So maybe ahead of the fact. But even if they bounce, the problem with the stocks is it's stuck at its 99 high. That is not a random thing. I think the semis are dead, and by inference, tech has problems.
So you're saying the broader technology sector, even though it's Microsoft, Amazon,
consider
Netflix,
this. This is
Apple.
Kind of fun. In 2000, the stocks peaked before the S&P at the top. In 2002, they bottomed before the S&P. In 2007, they peaked before the S&P. In 2009, they bottomed before the S&P.
So it's a leading indicator?
Sure it is.
Well, so we can get a little granular here. I mean, let's look at the stocks. It's down 10% from its 52-week and all-time highs mm-hmm. here, the SMH, the ETF that tracks it. Obviously, you know, NVIDIA, there's some real horses in there, okay? But let's look at Taiwan Semiconductor. They make chips for like all the major names that we know about. And let's look at AMAT. They make the equipment that makes chips. Taiwan Semi is a big customer of theirs. What's going on here? These stocks are in bear markets, both of them. And it's not just about trade. It could be that leading indicator sort of thing. We've talked about memory and the cycle that we've had. We've talked about data center. We've talked about all these trends.
Right.
But when we go into the fall, we could see, especially as we lead into the next iPhone launch, you could be seeing a lot of double ordering, and investors may start taking that into account right now. And I'll just tell you, just lastly, Micron, we've talked about this two times now at the prior all-time highs back in March.
With great numbers.
They had great numbers. Stock can't rally.
Yeah. But here's the question. I mean, are semiconductors, I hate to go back to this, but are they trade war stocks or not? Are semiconductors revealing something else about the global economy?
Well, I tell you what, if you look at what Taiwan Semi has told us over the last couple quarters, I think you went from actually where there's pent-up demand, you had an inventory clean-out. I actually think they're going to be building some inventory. I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think you can make a tell on the global economy. I think you make a tell on positioning.
Yeah, but
semis had been the trade to stay in the game on, and I tell you what, again, this is Carter's kind of territory, but maybe you can make an argument on lower highs. I would make an argument this is the one part of the market that was holding up, and it doesn't make me feel good. It's breaking down.
So I made the case that we could see a short-term bounce. But, Carter, if you're talking about, do you see this as being something of a cataclysmic sell-off? Because then
it's
the children
trade.
At this point.
Just the way Dow theory argues that transports are wise, right, that it's got to be moved on boats and trains and planes. This is beta within information technology, and it's cyclicality. And so the cyclical element within the sector stalling and having literally peaked in 2000 and the bottom in 2002 and 2007, that's not nothing. And so I think one needs to be mindful of it and proceed with caution.
Do you think things are different? Just like Dow theory may not be as accurate as before, chips, in terms of being a component into the leading technology companies, they are not
such a great
component, right?
Well, I mean,
into the leading technology. I mean, Apple, yes. But Amazon, no.
Well, I think what you're getting at is now we have all of a sudden, you know, you buy a car off the lot and it's got like 20 sensors that didn't exist 5 years ago that are being made by all these names that we just talked about. So, you know, Internet of Things, you talk about autonomous driving, this is going to be very chip heavy things. I think we might have seen the run up or the outperformance in the stocks over the last couple of years. I think incorporates a lot of that now. And listen, some of the valuations are pretty reasonable. We've talked about Intel for a long time and it's kind of stuck in the mud. They've had their own issues here, but it's a reasonably valued stock. Great.
Stuck in the mud. I mean, the thing's almost in a bear market.
But
I mean, it's collapsed.
Yeah.
And I, you know, the thing that worries me about an NVIDIA is I actually think that they should be worried about Intel. I think you get into a place where I think a lot of these chips that Intel, that NVIDIA has had a leading leadership position in, ultimately you are back to a commoditized space. And some of these valuations are tough to keep. Micron, I mean, Micron's a cheap stock, and it's not necessarily what people care about when they're owning it.
And we saw a flurry of M&A. M&A typically happens at the peak of a cycle. There was a lot of M&A in the past 18 months in semis.
Yeah.
You have to ask yourself, is it, your question, I think, is the most important. Is this a China sell-off, or is this a
global economy
cyclical
sell-off.
Global economy sell-off? I'm weighing to the former versus the latter. I think it's, for me, it's about a trade war, and I think that every time we've sold off
Steve,
on a trade war, it's been bought back.
And I don't think the world's falling apart, be really clear. I actually think that global growth is okay. We've actually had some slight kickback up in PMIs, but we haven't necessarily needed much to get derailed. And so if you think of all the things, I mean, whether it was Gary Cohn, whether it was, you know, the Fed, whether it was, you know, all these little things or these very big things, I think the Fed's
right.
A big deal.
So the Fed, I think, is backing off, is probably getting less hawkish than they were. That's probably positive for the
I'm
overall
not so sure
market.
About that,
I would say that earnings are going to gear up in the next couple of weeks. We have the lack of a buyback, so I think that's a negative for the markets. But I think going into earnings, I still think you get a tailwind.
Less hawkish
is not bullish. If the Fed backs away aggressively, that will terrify the market.
That's not what we've seen, though. What we've seen is that every time we go to 4 versus 3 rate hikes, that becomes the headwind.
I don't know why we think the Fed's less hawkish. I think the Fed is more hawkish. And I think, again, I'm seeing price pressures come through to all these regional Fed surveys. I'm listening to what Powell said at that last, you know, really, that was really his first meeting.
Sounds like almost no matter what, they will raise rates.
And he pretty much said that this is good news here and that this is exactly where we wanted to be and there's no stopping us now. And if you listen to the Fed officials and the worst of the volatility in February when the market was
having
first,
I thought the Fed
like,
was
not
a political
respond to the
organization under President Obama. I think the Fed is a political organization under Trump.
I think
that they're taking their marching orders from the global economy. And when you see trade, if that dings profitability, you'll see the
Fed.
So
our central bank is not independent?
Definitively not.
Definitively not.
So anyone who says that it is.
If they continue,
anyone who says that it is
if they
silly.
Continue their rate hiking path.
Don't agree with that at all.
Then what will you say?
If they continue, no, I think they want to normalize. I think they have
so
a vested interest to normalize.
On the path
but
that they've already telegraphed.
Three
then.
Or four is the path they already
right.
said, and the markets have absorbed it already. But if it hits the fan, they're backing away from that.
I think that that's what they had already indicated prior to them.
So then that wouldn't prove. So that
then, I don't think
so
that's
your
political
premise
or
then,
not political.
So, but don't you think that they know where Trump is? Don't you think that they know that Trump uses the stock market as a barometer of success? Do you think Powell, who Trump put into place, is going to thwart the efforts of Trump to use that barometer?
I don't think the Fed is working for the president. I mean, if you think Powell is that much of a puppet, I mean, look at the guy's history. It's very distinguished.
Whoa,
he was the right guy for the job.
I didn't say just Powell was. I said every Fed governor is. Every Fed chair is. We're getting lost in the weeds here. That's just my opinion.
Okay. All right. So what do we do here? I mean, the first trading day of the second half.
Because usually when we talk about tech like this, tech to save the day, we're talking about FANG, right? And FANG really did turn things around
today.
And so to me, I actually think that that's obviously an easy go-to trade, especially when you think about a high flying. Remember Red Hat a couple weeks ago sold off 20%. I think there's a lot of things that you can start to put together and say we're starting to see a deceleration in orders across a lot of different things. You're not going to see that in these companies like Facebook and Google that are reliant on advertising. That's going to be later in the cycle. So to me, I think because people feel so comfortable with the valuation versus the growth there, you're going to continue to see people pile in there. But I do think it makes sense to keep an eye on some of these other names that are not really on your radar. Taiwan Semi, like we talked about, is one of them.
Yeah.
Red Hat should be one of them. And this is what you should be focused on as we head into Q2 earnings in the next couple of weeks, because these are the things that are these are gonna crack before you ever see a crack in FANG.
I mean, look, the recovery in FANG, just to put it in context, I mean, last week was the worst week in 12 weeks for the tech sector itself, the worst in 14 weeks for the semis, the worst in 14 weeks for FANG. So just recovering a little bit. I mean, the question is, are the highs that were made 2-3 weeks ago going to be enduring over the next week? Are we going to make new highs? No. Can we do it in 2 weeks? No. Meaning the presumption is we're stalled, we're struggling, and all you need is another red hat or two, and then you've got real fragility in the one thing that has held up.
Let's just look at what happened last week, though. End of quarter, end of half year. So there was a lot of dynamics along with the China trade that made everything that you just said factual.
Okay. Well, despite today's reversal higher, the chart master here says there are two sectors you got to avoid. So, Carter, why don't you head over to the plasma and tell us all about
it? Well, I mean, it's just what we've been talking about. So we know that tech has the most exposure to foreign sales and semi in particular. But the true sort of cyclical trade, this melodious phrase, synchronized global growth, I want to talk about industrials and financials, because this has been the dream since the election in 2016 that you want to be long financials and industrials for tax cuts and for all the good things that have been announced, and yet it's really not working. So what I have here is every single S&P 500 industrial and financial stock, about 140 names, $6 trillion, plotted equal weight, that's the key, and they represent about 25% of the S&P. The top chart is a beautiful uptrend. Again, you have names like Caterpillar and Boeing, American Express, Goldman Sachs. One, we've broken trend. But here's the more important thing, at least by my work. We have undone the entire move from the election, so that this is relative performance to the S&P 500. All of the alpha was in 8-week period, and the whole thing has been given back. And we're well below where we were on a relative basis from the election, basically getting to be almost 2 years ago. Let's move on to a few other things. We have the circumstance as of Friday where both industrials and financials as sectors closed at the midway point down. Now, that has only happened 9 other years. You see it right here. And what I looked at was what happens to the S&P performance in the second half in those years. The average performance down 61 basis points, median down, compared to the average second half of up 4 or 5%. This is not a good setup either. So finally, I want to look at the correlation. They are running at about an 89% correlation over the past 1 year. Now look at over the past 5 years. They are literally the same percentage gain. And each of them, if I were to have a trend line drawn, have broken trend. And they also have all the elements of something what is known as a head and shoulders top. This is not good, and it speaks to, if this isn't working, can we continue to be saved by tech? And what if tech doesn't hold up?
Carter's going to come back.
Sure. I think it's almost beyond precedent for a guy to leave the desk
and not ever come back and have an empty chair.
I don't want that happening on my watch. Well, in your case, though, that's not a surprise.
Like, hit my chair.
It's not a surprise, Dan.
Well, next time, Carter. So at the beginning of the year, when everybody came out and they were saying, be overweight financials, were you thinking in your head, financials and industrials have a really high correlation? So if you say overweight financials, by default, it's a thematic trade, right?
I mean, right. It's the trade that is, if taxes are cut, if interest rates go higher, the two things that people relied on really have not happened. Or if they have, they haven't had the intended effect on those securities. But the problem is that's 25% of the market, and that's really where cyclicality is. Energy can't move the market. We know that healthcare is sort of stuck. We know that staples have got their issue. So that if the core middle, so to speak, the cyclical names are not working, and yet we're clustering in more and more into the tech names, and tech were to falter, there's really, by definition, not much that could help if we get into trouble.
So I agree with that, except for if I look at the market going back 5 years, tech has been the horse, right? If I look at Q's against the S&P, they've outperformed substantially. They've outperformed even since the market peaked by 7 or 8%, whereas you said the industrials have underperformed. So while I get concerned at the price action in the stocks, shouldn't this just be a continuation of what we've had and a different composition, frankly, of the economy?
Well, all true. The issue is, in those past 5 years, has tech had meaningful drawdowns? It has. All we have to do is have another such meaningful drawdown, and by inference, the market draws down.
I think what's also interesting at this time now, we know that obviously buy boxes helped out a lot on EPS growth. We now have this tax cut from last year that's helping that too. But all of a sudden now we've seen this spat of IPOs. It's the busiest year in IPOs at 120 this year, busiest year since 2012. And it's likely to be the busiest since the dot-com bust, you know, back in 2000. So all of a sudden you have this new supply, and that's great. I'm happy for some new names to talk about other than Fang on this desk. I mean, wouldn't that be fantastic? But don't forget about that supply. I mean, that's a really important thing. I know it doesn't mean much, $35 billion so far in IPOs, but a lot of these things have performed very well, and it gets people attention going to other things. And the last thing, all this media merger frenzy, it kind of feels a little bubblish too. So
Doesn't. It's a sector that's in transition, Dan. Okay. I mean, that to me is totally based upon a bottom-up call on what's going on. I mean, their business is at stake right now. It doesn't surprise me that they're all buying.
Right, but they're tripping all over each other, Tim, you know, bidding stuff up to levels that don't make any sense when a lot of people actually couldn't justify
maybe not smart for Disney
to be doing that. The strategic sense that they made from a valuation standpoint, the debt that they have to take to do these things, trust me, we're going to look back and say, was it a brilliant idea?
I think that's right. But to say that that's an overall tell on where the market is, I think this is a secular dynamic rather than a cyclical dynamic.
It's part of a pastiche is what he says.
It would be a mosaic of sorts.
A mosaic, exactly.
If he used pastiche, Tim wouldn't have interrupted him.
Probably not.
I never interrupt anybody.
No, don't interrupt a pastiche. Coming up, casino stocks crapping out with all the big players under pressure. But one trader made a bet that the worst is over. We will explain the trade. Plus, Tesla nailing its production number for the quarter. But after soaring, the stock is sinking. So where is the Tesla rally? Gene Munster will be here to explain. And later, China hovering in a bear market. And one group of stocks is traders running to the river. We are going bottom fishing, Chinese style. We're live from New York City's Times Square. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Casino stocks crapping out today after Macau gambling revenue for June fell short of Wall Street expectations. The weak number sending all the major players lower on the day, but the pain doesn't stop there. So far this year, shares of MGM and Melco Resorts both down double digits. Wynn Resorts also falling 9%, while Las Vegas Sands managed to eke out gains up about 3%, making the words of the great songwriter Kenny Rogers never more true. Do you hold them or fold them? Do you hold them or you fold them, Grasso?
Whoa.
It's oversimplified. Interesting the way you say that. So those are all the names that you want me to trade in a blanket of names of the casino names. I would say that you hold Sands, LVS. You fold the rest. But what's counterintuitive is that MGM has the least exposure to Macau. Those numbers were weak in Macau. That one you would think would do better going forward.
So you do not want exposure to Macau, and you want Vegas exposure.
I think at this point, you should, yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes, I would want Vegas exposure, but every time you bet on MGM to make up the lag, it never does. It's down 15%. Mm-hmm. So I would say maybe you take a flyer on MGM to close that gap now with Macau numbers that are out in public.
Look, this is a combination of Macau and this combination of trade war. Again, these are stocks that actually, you know, potentially think of the U.S. operators that getting most of their revenue or their growth is coming from Macau. Look at LVS. It's 30% growth year over year in terms of Macau. Is Macau falling apart? People are watching the yuan. People are watching the political process in China. People get very worried about capital flows. At those times, people get very worried about the casinos. I think this is a time where probably the currency and what's going on in China is a temporary dynamic as a result of the trade war. I think this is an opportunity, but it's not tomorrow.
Right. Just think of it. If the reference point is China, just put LVS in the context of what it did in the 07 peak. It was $145. In the 09 low, it was $1.45.
Wow.
I mean, this is cyclicality at its most. It's a gambling chip, literally, the stock. And so here we are bouncing around. We're at 71 now, meaning if one's worried about the globe and one's worried about China, this can go as low as the imagination will allow. MGM had the same thing, drop from 100 to $1.70.
Wow.
So sitting here in the $40, $50 range or 28, close today.
These stocks have been massive outperformers.
Choose your own adventure with this stuff.
All right. Well, Dan saw some interesting options bets today. What'd you see?
Yeah, so Wynn in particular, I mean, it's a name that we talked about a lot, and it's obviously been pretty newsy. One of the newsiest, with Steve Wynn retiring or leaving the company earlier this year. The stock is down 23% from the all-time highs. We were just talking about a breakout a month and a half ago, and now we're talking about a stock in a bear market. There was an interesting trade that caught my eye today when the stock was trading near the lows, down near 153. There was a seller out in September of puts, a seller of the 140 puts at about $5. And really, if this is an opening trade, it's a bullish trade, and this trader is saying that I'm willing to buy the stock down at 140. He's got some room down to really 135 on that sort of trade. After a free fall with option prices ripping, that makes some sense. And real quickly to those charts, look at the 1 year. Look at this thing just fell out of bed. You could call that possibly a pretty big double top back there at the prior highs. But there's that 140 level. Looks like support. And real quickly, here's a 10-year chart. I mean, when you look at this thing, Carter, I don't know what this says to you, but is that the mother of all
forming? That right shoulder is to be determined, yeah. But it sure looks like that's what it is.
Yeah. All right. That's it. That's all I got for you. Yeah.
Okay. For more options action, check out the full show Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Still ahead, the entire crypto universe is rallying, but the Bitcoin boom, is it back for real? Our very own crypto baller will join us. Well, sort of. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, First in Business Worldwide. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
Boy, I'm going down.
That's what's happening to Chinese internet stocks. But the traders say it could be creating a buy opportunity for a number of stocks. They'll give you the names. Plus, Tesla made its production numbers for the Model 3. But there's more to the headline number than you think. Tesla guru Gene Munster will explain when Fast Money returns.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Tesla hitting the target on their Model 3 production numbers, but then shares made a U-turn. So what gives? Our Phil LeBeau is out in Chicago with the very latest. Hey, Phil.
Hi, Melissa. Lots of news from Tesla. We'll get to the production and the delivery numbers in just a bit, but a headline late in the day, chief engineer Doug Field, who's been with the company for 5 years. Remember, he was essentially taken off of the main production of the Model 3 back in May. Well, he is leaving the company. So that's the headline late in the day. Not a huge surprise there. Now let's talk about the delivery news that came out early this morning and the Q2 deliveries. These numbers, especially when you look at the Model 3, that's the disappointment that the street sees here. 18,440 of the 40,000 were Model 3. Most on the street were expecting at least 26,000 deliveries when it comes to the Model 3. So that news took a little bit of the luster off of the news that came out yesterday when the company said, look, we had a great second quarter. And in terms of the Model 3, we hit our goal of producing 5,000 per week. 6,000 per week by the end of August is the new guidance from the company. Then you have a couple of analysts coming out today and saying, I don't think this is sustainable. Ephraim Levy with CFRA wrote, we do not see this production rate as operationally or financially sustainable. RBC Capital, Richard Spack said, in our view, the efforts taken, that includes the tent and the overtime, represent a burst rate, not a yet sustainable pace. And that's why as you take a look at shares of Tesla, yes, the company reaffirmed its guidance in terms of expecting to be profitable in the third quarter, cash flow positive. The stocks just moved a little bit lower throughout the day as analysts weighed in on the possibility that they may not be able to sustain the production rate for the Model 3 that they've laid out for the third quarter. Melissa?
How big a deal is Doug Field leaving, Phil? I mean, he was on leave since, what, May or so? So he's been out of the picture for a couple months at the time when the company has been ramping up production.
I think that if you look at the history Tesla in terms of executives, important executives, once they've sort of been phased out or they have decided that, look, I don't want to be a part of what's going on here at Tesla, it's time to move on and try something else. Tesla has been able to weather those departures. So while Doug Field has been a huge story over the last 5 years, he has been essentially pulling himself back and has pulled himself back or has been phased out, so to speak, since May. And as a result, you know, Tesla is now a company moving in a different direction.
All right. Phil, thanks. Phil LeBeau in Chicago for us. Well, one Tesla analyst said that they predicted a massive production improvement right here on CNBC. Take a listen.
We think that Tesla is going to produce somewhere between 4,300 and 4,900 Model 3s in the final week of the quarter. Now, Elon Musk has been out saying it's going to be 5,000, so this is a little bit of a miss, but I don't think that that changes the story here, which is a massive improvement, basically a doubling of Model 3 production quarter on quarter.
So we're now joined by that Tesla bull and a part-time astrologer, Gene Munster of Loop Ventures. Gene, before we gaze into the constellations for your future Tesla predictions, what'd you make of the price action today? Because, I mean, pre-market, we're up 5+%.
I think it shows how embedded the bear and the bull case is. The bear case, the stock goes up, as you said, 6%. The reason why, based on my math and my conversations with the buy side today, the stock traded off was if you take that 28,000, that was the Model 3 production number, 28,000, divided by 12, you get to 2,400 per week. That's a similar run rate that they exited the March quarter at. And so it's the bears have their case to say that even though that 5,000 number was pretty, they had to throw everything at it to get there, and the reality is they haven't ramped. So I was surprised, to answer your question, at the action throughout the day. But after talking to investors, I can understand why the action was what it was.
All right, let's go stargazing, Gene, and take a look at some of your future Tesla predictions. First up, you predict production of Model 3 is to hit 6,000 by September.
That sounds nice.
Why is that?
So this is a little bit later than what Elon Musk is saying. He's saying they're going to get there in 1 month at the end of, or 2 months at the end of August. So we're thinking at the end of September. So the reason why we think that is that it's safe to say he's had 21 misses. This actually, this 5,000 production number was the first time in about 9 months that he's gotten one right. And I think it's safe to always dial back what he's saying. So that's why we think it's going to meet that production number by the end of the September quarter. I want to put a quick finer point on why that's so important is if they hit that number, that's going to equate to about 48,000 Model 3s produced in the September quarter. And that should get them just to about profitability, slightly profitable. And I think that that is going to be an important part of the story, I think, is obviously getting that profitability. So it's not going to be wildly profitable in September. I just want to warn everyone. But I think if they get to that 6,000, 48,000 for the quarter, that moves them in the right direction to profitability and, most importantly, sustainability.
All right, next prediction, Gene, you're expecting a capital raise in the second half of 2019. 2019, so that's next year. How big?
So this could be a huge capital raise. And obviously, the company's out saying that they're not going to raise money. So we're going in a little bit different direction in what they're saying. The purpose of this is, so how big could this be? It could be $1 billion plus, maybe even $2 billion kind of a capital raise. There's two purposes for it. One is they need to refi the current debt that they have. They're paying way too much of an interest rate. If they get to profitability, that will make lenders more confident about the sustainability of the story and should allow them to refi at a lower rate. And separately, is they still have this option open around doing some manufacturing in China, and they'll need to raise capital to advance that. So we think that they will, in fact, raise a lot of capital in the back half of 2019.
All right, last prediction. Tesla is the best bet in large cap technology. Really?
So we still, yeah, we still love Apple. I just want to be very clear, but that is a different animal. That is something that is slowly going to move higher. But if you look at just pure upside potential, and the big difference here is if the reason why Tesla presents so much upside relative to some of the other larger cap tech is it's so controversial. There's this embedded buyer of all the people that are short. And so there needs to be a psychological shift, I think, with the street that, in fact, this is a sustainable company. And we think that they will ultimately get there, and that is the pathway to showing the most upside to larger cap tech over the next few years.
What kind of upside are you talking about, Gene?
We don't have price targets at Loop Ventures. We let investors kind of figure that out. But we can say orders of magnitude. And I hate to be vague about that, but I think that this has the most upside to all large cap tech.
All right, Gene, thanks for the stargazing. We appreciate it.
Gene Thank Munster you, Melissa.
Of Loop Ventures. How did the chart look today on this reversal?
Well, I mean, look, this is a highly cyclical name. The bigger picture is this. We know that this stock came out of the gate in 2010, and no one quite knew real, not real. And then in March of 2013, at $25, it went up tenfold to March of 14, and essentially has been sitting there ever since, meaning the market took it from $5 billion to about 50, and here we are at 56. So it's working off that move. The market priced in all of these things that have come out. Now the question is it just going to stay stuck, or is there some up leg like that, like multiples, what Gene had referred to? My hunch is it's stuck. And as a trading chip, sure, you can make money, lose money, but I think there are better things to do.
Well, it's a great stock to trade. I mean, listen, this stock in May was at 280, and it kind of ran into this number, and so they sold the news, which is pretty clear. I think it's a shame when you talk to people who've driven this car, this Model 3, they really like it, and they're not too upset about paying $50,000 for a car that was originally going to be $35,000 for all intents and purposes. I think it's really important to remember the game that Elon Musk is playing with investors is probably not a great one, especially when you have a car that people really like and there's a lot of demand for it. Don't forget, a few years ago, when they announced this, they got a zero interest $400 million loan from people laying it out. So, like,
but is a $50,000 car a mass market car? Because that's
maybe the goalposts have shifted a little bit. What I'm saying is the messaging stinks. Okay, like, just keep it in a hot.
Well, put it this way: I got longer at 280. I'm still long the name. Today, when I looked at it, I said, should I trim at that 355 mark? I was unhappy with the price action today. I don't like that precipitous drop. I would have thought once they met those production goals, targets, I would have thought the stock would have been $400 bid. So it's making me skeptical about being anything longer than just a trade at this point.
I mean, you can take today's news, as Phil pointed out, any way you want. The bulls, something in there for bulls, something in there for bears. So on some level, I'm not surprised at all. This is such a big number. It's total classic sell the fact. The bottom line is the company still, we don't know whether they're still going to have a cash burn effect in the second half of the year. If they jammed a bunch of cars out the door just to be now cash flow somewhat neutral to positive, but we don't know they can hold that, I think we're where we have been.
What did you guys make of Gene's last prediction, and that is that Tesla is the best bet?
Listen, when you go in any one of their cars and you see this massive iPad like this and no dials and everything like that, and then you think about what they're talking about with autonomous in sometime in the future.
You think no one else is doing that?
Well, I understand.
I mean, it's not a tech name in terms of gross margin.
I get it, but I'm just saying you can see the ecosystem that can be created. You can see a company like Google at some point when their growth starts to slow and say, you know what, that's our next frontier.
They used to be able to. They were afforded the past trading on a technology company valuation. I get you on the margins. The problem is now they're being gauged as a car company with productions. It feels like whack-a-mole to me, and I'm running out.
What's
running
ironic
out of
is that Elon Musk in his letter said, "I think we're finally a real car company."
Yes,
I don't want to be a real car company.
Is that what they want to be?
And watch out.
The thing on Tesla is, for so long they had such a head start in the EV world. I don't think they have a major head start at all. I think every day that they don't get a production numbers, and let's face it, once they get to them, I just think a lot of competitors are closing the gap. I think the assumption that there's nobody in this space, right, just because you can have an iPad on your dashboard.
It's a little silly to think in 2018 that it couldn't be a tech company, because Apple Computer at one point wanted to be a phone company. And now they own the market, they own the margins, they own everything about it. So let's give Elon Musk probably the benefit of the doubt that he's probably got a plan for this one.
Still ahead, the China crush continues as its tech stocks feel the pain. But could these beaten down names be the perfect buying opportunities? The traders will weigh in. And later, check out this stock. The Chartmaster says it is forming a very dangerous technical pattern that has him pressing sell. He'll tell you the name later on this hour. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. China in a bear market. Check out the FXI, down more than 20% from its 52-week highs. And it's the Chinese internet stocks really taking it on the chin. Our own Dom Chu is in the newsroom breaking it down. Hey, Dom.
Well, Melissa, the trade skirmish that's turning into a trade battle that some think could end up becoming a full-blown trade war is taking its toll on markets all over the globe, including the major U.S. indices. But while we have seen an overhang on our stocks because of it, it's far worse when it comes to the stocks of Chinese internet companies, which are arguably being driven more to the downside by trade and international relations worries. So just check out three of the biggest Chinese internet names out there. We've got shares of e-commerce giant Alibaba, now off by about 13% from their recent highs that we saw just on June 5th. Baidu, which some call the Google of China, is now off 15% from its recent highs on May 16th. And then there's JD.com, which is another big internet retailer and e-commerce play. It's lost around a quarter of its value since January 29th. Sentiment around investing in these once high-flying and relatively more volatile Chinese stocks could be increasingly exposed to the negative headlines on escalating trade tensions with the U.S. That's more evident if you look at some of the bigger ETFs that track the larger cap Chinese stocks. The iShares China Large Cap ETF, that ticker FXI, it hit a high of $54 a share on January 26th. They've now lost a fifth of their value since then. So, Melissa, there's definitely broader emerging market weakness due to things like perhaps a rising U.S. dollar, but many Chinese stocks also being driven by trade tensions, so it will be an overhang until things start to move in a more positive direction. Back over to you guys.
All right. Thanks, Dom. Dom Chu in the newsroom. So with all these names falling, we thought there's no better time to go bottom fishing. So here's how it works.
Is this a game?
Yes, it's a game.
All right.
It's another game.
All right. I'm fishing.
So we'll go around the horn, and if you would buy
the
stock, you call it a good catch. But if the stock has further to fall, you would call it a dead fish. So good catch, you buy.
Good catch.
Dead fish, you do not buy.
Dead
get
fish.
It? Very easy.
Simple
All right.
enough.
Tim is the first victim. Alibaba, good catch or dead fish?
Good catch, good catch. I mean, look, Baba, actually, if you think relative to the asset class, that is a nice-looking fish, by the way. It's a green, healthy-looking fish, probably
that's
from some nuclear pond.
That's what you want in your fish. You want a green
some
fish.
Nuclear pond and so, no. Bottom line, Alibaba has actually outperformed the FXI. It's been roughly 22% since the beginning of April when emerging markets have really underperformed. Dom pointed out the underperformance in the sector. If you look at, look, they've got fiscal Q1 2019 coming up. You're going to see 60% revenue growth in this quarter, 43-44% EBITDA margin. I think the valuation in Alibaba makes a ton of sense here. And I think the trade kind of madness, this is one of the largest stocks in the emerging market index.
Right.
That's what's going on here, people. And it's outperformed that index massively.
If you had to choose, though, would you choose an Alibaba or would you go for a large cap tech name like an Amazon or Netflix?
Me personally right here, yeah. I like this fact. Alibaba to me has been consolidating all year long. Okay, so the story, it's a much better secular trend, I believe, in China than it is here. They have like
so it's
three,
a good
four.
Catch.
I think it's a good catch. I mean, I actually like it at the low end of this range here.
And you don't have to worry about valuation when you made the comparison to Amazon. People mm-hmm. can't get their head around that valuation. That's the other reason why they go to Alibaba.
Oh, so that's a good
catch. Good catch.
For you.
Good catch.
Good
Steve.
Catch.
Right,
Steve.
Good
Steve's
catch.
Green fish.
Now. Here's Steve's stock. Baidu. What do you say?
So when Dom introed this package, it was Baidu was the Chinese Google. And they're in a lot of the same lines of business that Google is in. Obviously, they're much stronger in China. Google is weak in China, but stronger globally. I would think that the biggest thing is this, that the headwind that you've been dealing with at Baidu has been the trade war. I don't think it's going to be as bad as everyone thinks. I do think you'll see some sort of
that. Yeah, waiting for the fish.
Yes, the fish, the green one. The green one, good catch.
All right.
When I get to mine, I'm going to show you a group chart that I think. But go ahead, you're next.
No,
but what do you think about Baidu being a good catch?
I've got a judgment I want to talk about, the whole group as it relates to.
Oh, so if you told us what you thought, then it would be
he's casting his net at the end.
No, not at the end. Okay, fine. I have a group chart here that might be relevant. If you take the top five stocks in the S&P, plus Netflix and Priceline versus the top seven stocks in China Internet. That Chinese group doubled the performance of the U.S. group last year, up 80 versus 40. But now they're down 10, whereas our group has continued up another 30.
Oh.
There is much more excess in the Chinese group than there is in our group. And I think
or
the whole
growth
thing,
potential, depending on how you look at it.
Or growth potential, but markets are smart. They priced in a lot already. I think the whole thing is a dead fish.
Oh, so you say dead fish. Well, and even Dan hasn't had a turn yet. You're already on the dead fish.
But this goes back to that original conversation we were having in the A block. I'm not allowed to talk about this, but I was going to use that as another one of the inputs. I think the fact that this group has been consolidating like this is another kind of tell, as you think about
it. So apply this analysis
to your stock, but I think it makes sense to look at all of these names in particular. And JD, here's one where they're growing sales 30% a year. They're number two in gross merchandise value behind Alibaba, slightly different business model in some parts of their business. Google just invested $550 million in this company at $40 a share. It's trading below that here. So to me, I think this is a good catch. If you look at it, just technically, it's bounced off 35, 36 on numerous times over the course of this year, and I think that's probably the opportunity to really jump in, but I like this story here.
Can we put up that red fish again? Because I have a question for Carter on his
I might even chuck a red fish on Dan's green fish, by the way. But let's,
oh, really?
I just think JD is always at loggerheads with Baba, and in fact, I think Baba's been doing everything they can do to push JD around, and even some of these deals I think they can,
frankly. But aren't they now in loggerheads with Walmart, who's an investor in JD, and Google? I mean, to me, I actually think about two guys who want to compete with Alibaba globally.
But I don't, again, it's like what Walmart did with Flipkart. I don't think Walmart is going to do anything in those local markets.
Okay. Can we go to Carter's FXI?
I want to see Carter's red fish.
FXI was Carter's red fish, and you made this comparison between the Chinese internet stocks and the S&P 5. Well, so FXI is state-owned enterprises.
Stocks are, think about it. They're individual traders, and there's individual judgments, but some of the biggest money trades stocks in groups. We know that. That's the way they...
So it doesn't matter that a lot of these stocks we're talking about are not in the FXI.
That's the issue. I mean, the FXI itself, look at the casino stocks we just talked about. If there's pressure in China, it doesn't matter what an individual player is going to do. There's going to be pressure, yes?
I agree with that. Stocks that trade as a group and higher beta ones in that group, like the Chinese ones, are going to outperform and then underperform, as you laid it out. The FXI has got a lot of Chinese banks in it. There's a reason why that should be underperforming at a time we're very concerned about China. This is a global tech trade. Do you think that's over?
No, I mean, I think FXI is a dead fish, and I think everything we talked about is sort of dead fish-like.
Music's playing, sorry. Yeah.
Still ahead, don't call it a comeback. Bitcoin is surging. There's one key thing the whole crypto universe is waiting for. We will tell you what that is. Plus, there is one name the Chartmaster says is in the early stages of a classical technical pattern that could spell trouble ahead. He will explain. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Bitcoin having a great weekend. Take a look at this chart, the cryptocurrency posting a 12% rally from Friday to today. We invited our crypto baller BK on the show today, he's busy on a boat. You see there, sent a postcard in. So if BK were here, what would we ask him? So Tim, what would you want to
know? The first thing I would say is, why do you look like Captain Steubing? The second question, though, is why is Bitcoin higher? This is a massive move. BK.
Well, actually, funny you should ask that, because through the miracle of blockchain, we've got an answer from him, BK writes, Bitcoin failed to test the June 24th low of 5755. News flow has turned bullish. Wow, short and sweet. Anyone here buying this bounce? All right. Rasa, what would you ask BK?
Well, it's always driven by certain catalysts. What are the catalysts in the second half? We already just booked the first half of the year. What do we have to look forward to for potential catalysts?
We actually have an answer for that question as well. BK wrote this here from an undisclosed location, again, a boat, but we don't know where exactly the boat is. There are a number of Bitcoin catalysts, those catalysts being ICE, NYSE, cryptocurrency exchange, Fidelity working in custody, that's $1 trillion in AUM, assets under management, able to buy crypto, and regulatory clarity. Thanks for checking in with Captain BK. So let's go ahead and trade this. When you took a look at that price action, what did you make of it over the weekend?
Yeah, I thought it was head-scratching. I mean, the things that obviously in a massive downtrend, the range has gotten tighter and tighter. Look at it on a log chart. It's still in that downtrend. I actually think you'll probably see lower lows, but I'm really starting to pick at it here because a lot of those catalysts that BK is talking about, I don't know if you saw the announcement out of Coinbase today. Their custody solution went live. These things are all going to come. It's just a matter of when.
All right, still ahead. The Chartmaster, he's not done yet. He's going to go break down one chart he says could be flashing a major sell signal. He will explain what has him so worried. We're live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. All of you at home are big fans of our technicians and their charts, but as you watch them doodle over at the plasma, you probably found yourself wondering what some of those lines even mean. Since the Chartmaster is here today, we are getting him to break down the classic pattern in a segment we like to call The More You Know. So Carter's over at the plasma,
great
obviously
music.
Something you've heard him mention over and over again, the old head and shoulders pattern. So Carter, what is it?
I think the key word is old, meaning before there were computers, the original practitioners were desperate to try to convince people that what they were doing wasn't insanity. Of course, we know now with all the algorithms it wasn't. They named things that people could see, cups and handles, heads and shoulders. And the head and shoulders formation, the key to it is it's a reversal formation, as you see right here, and then it occurs at bottoms and at tops. And then finally, it precedes a major advance or decline. So I thought we could look at a few from the past and then find one for now. Now, here's Caterpillar. This is Caterpillar in the 2015-2016 low, and a massive move. The stock from the right shoulder up about 145%. And the key is it moves from the neckline. Let's look at another one on a five-year chart. This is Micron. They're all a little different, but the same principle. In this case, up about 270% from the right shoulder, and all the good eating starts from the neckline. All right. On the way down, a head and shoulders top, just this year, a big asset manager, affiliated managers, you can see the formation, you can see the neckline, and you could, of course, see the plunge just in the past two, 3 months down 25%. Let's do another one. The point is, it doesn't matter what the business is. This is truck engines. There's nothing to do with an asset management business. But the key is the same. You see the neckline, you see the top, and you see the big plunge just over the past four or five months. Down 23-24%. So financials, industrials are in this category. Here's an early stage of bullish to bearish reversal. We know we've got this beautiful trend line and we have a break-in trend. We have our head and shoulders top and we are hovering on Citibank right at the neckline. The risk is that it, like so many instances, completes the topping formation. Head and shoulders, bottoms and tops are very real, and they are efficacious.
Hey, Carter, at what point do you really identify the right shoulder? Because a lot of charts set up that way, and, you know, arguably you can really be aggressive on going to the downside.
That's right. Well, you want to, the best head and shoulders tops, where the right shoulder, as seen here, is lower than the left shoulder. And so once it starts to fail to make a new high and slump, usually that's the tell that it's in trouble.
Very cool.
So, Dan, you had a head and shoulder chart before, right?
Yeah, so that was really interesting. To me, that right shoulder hadn't formed yet.
Because the right shoulder wasn't quite there, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes that's where you get the most bang for your buck, down to the neckline, too.
All right. Up next, final trade. Final trade, Carter.
The dogs of the Dow, loser J&J for recovery trade. Up.
Dan?
Yeah, JD, I like taking a shot down near that support at 36.
Steve Grosso.
Carter, it has been in and out. I'm currently in this stock. It's had a huge drawdown. Bye.
By the way, I think Carter gets an MVP vote today. I mean,
totally.
Showing up in the jacket, heavy OA presence here.
Good catch.
He dominated.
Good catch.
No
debt.
And for that, I'm going to sell JD.com because it's the opposite of Dan. I think their margins are deteriorating. Sell JD.com.
All right. I'm Melissa Lee. Thanks for watching. See you back here. Oh, actually, we're off tomorrow. Bad Money starts right now.